All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're going to shift a little bit away from the precious metals sector, especially as I am chatting with Mark Chandler. He is a managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog. Mark, I want to start off with your assessment, your recap of the month of May, the moves that we saw in the markets, the moves that we saw in any particular sectors, because overall, I think the month of May was pretty good for investors. If you were invested, let's say, outside of the US dollar, which had a bit of a downtrend, there was a lot of positive moves to the upside. What's your takeaway from the month that is pretty much wrapping up thanks to the long weekend here in the US?
Yeah, what an incredible month, huh? I mean, you know, the US yield softened, the dollar stayed under pressure, but the US stock market, not really necessarily the leader. The Europe's Dow Jones Stocks 600, which is sort of like the U.S. S&P 500, hit record highs. Chinese saw money return into the stock market for the first time in several months. So I think that it was really the month of really risk-taking, and this kept U.S. yields low and kept the dollar under pressure. I kind of marvel, though, at some patterns in the market. Where what caught my eye in the FX market was sterling. It was the strongest of the major currencies, up 2.7% in the month. And what's remarkable about it is that that there's some seasonal patterns, and sterling has fallen the last 11 years against the dollar in May. And not only did it reverse it this month, but it also was the strongest of the majors. And I think what's driving this is sort of the couple of the key drivers of the major capital flows right now, and that is playing for the recovery. The UK's vaccination, economy reopening seems to be ahead of most countries and many countries. And the Bank of England, like the Bank of Canada, said in April about reducing the bond buying. So everybody loves sterling now. And just yesterday, so the second last day of the trading for the month for us, sterling actually closed at three-year highs above 142. It couldn't sustain it ahead of the weekend, made some profit-taking, but sterling's got a lot of momentum.
So, Mark, what about when it comes to the U.S. markets, the whole adage of sell in May and go away really turned on its head last year, especially when no one could go away. This year, though, the U.S. especially is starting to open up. Even Europe, there's a lot more traveling going on. Do you think that we are entering this seasonally slow period of time?
Well, it's possible. I still think that things haven't really fully opened up yet. A lot of the same drivers that lifted us last year seem to still be at work. I think people are playing more of the recovery type stocks. And that's why I think, you know, here we are, NASDAQ is actually down this month, losing about 1%, while it's really been the Dow. So I think that what some people might see is another opportunity to play for value over growth. That might be that switch, that rotation taking place. I see this in some of the plays in the airlines. You know, the reopening up of the U.S. for domestic travel has been very strong, and I can just see the traffic patterns. So perhaps this year is a repeat more of last year, where liquidity-driven expectations of stronger economic growth help lift risk assets, including equities.
So it could just continue to be pretty good for these markets then, hey? Because of how much liquidity is out there and, quite frankly, nowhere else to put it, these markets, you think, still have some upside?
Well, I mean, Europe's at record highs. Asia's not far from it, like, say, the MSCI Asia Pacific. And I think that as economies strengthen, I think, you know, it's remarkable in some ways. You know, a year ago, we had generally weak economies and strong stocks. And this year, we've had stronger economies, and yet the stock markets are really holding up pretty well. I have the S&P up about 12.2% this year, and say the German DAX up about 13%. It looks to me like the real laggard, besides the NASDAQ, as you would expect, is Asia, which is also very tech-heavy. You know, the Chinese have an index, the CSI 300. And that is up only 2% year to date. And so maybe the game or the play might not be so much focused on the U.S. and Europe, which have already had the moves, but maybe looking at Asia, which has really lagged behind.
Okay, something to consider, I guess, as we move into the main part of summer. Mark, what about next week? What are some of the key catalysts, some of the key news events that you're going to be watching to kick off June for us?
Sure. So I think four big things on my radar screen for next week. One is the Reserve Bank of Australia's meeting on June 1st. That's important because last week the Reserve Bank of New Zealand surprised the market and was more hawkish than many people expected. They didn't change rates or anything, but they did hint at the possibility of raising rates in the second half of next year. So the New Zealand dollar shot up. And even though the Australian economy is many times larger than New Zealand, many people see the two of them, agriculture or commodity countries and currencies linked monetary policy, many people perceive as linked. But I think the RBA has already indicated that this June meeting is not really in play. The key one is the July meeting. We will decide about whether to extend the quantitative easing or to slow it down, and also whether they continue to target the three-year yield at 10 basis points. Besides the RBA meeting, the other kind of interesting meeting is going to be the G7 finance ministers meeting. It'll be face-to-face for the first time in over a year. And the key issue here really is about taxation and about coordinating corporate taxes. The Biden administration has jumped aboard asking for it now, compromising to 15% minimum tax rate for corporations. This seems to be have pretty strong support within the G7, but the other element is how do you tax? What do you do about the digital tax that many countries want to put on because they see U.S. companies, especially, making sales in their country, but that country cannot tax that income, and so the U.S. has proposed taxing the top 100 companies globally, and that would help. That would bring in these U.S. digital companies, address that concern, but bring in other companies as well. So it's not just picking on U.S. companies. So that's the G7 meeting, finance ministers meeting, and then two pieces of economic data. One is the Eurozone CPI. That'll be the first look at May. And the important thing here is how it feeds into the ECB's decision on June 10th, whether to continue to the increase in bond buying that they announced in March, or whether to scale it back a bit. And this is, and partly the inflation number is going to feed into that debate. And the last piece of economic data of note here is the U.S. jobs data. Remember last month's big disappointment? The median forecast was almost 1 million, and we got about 1/4 of that. The early call this time is about 600,000. And so that could help keep strengthen ideas of that the U.S. economy itself is very robust despite some weak economic data really throughout the month of May. Canada also releases the jobs data, and there I'm concerned that the Canadian dollar, many of us may have gotten a little bit in front of our skis here in the sense that the market, the speculative market in the futures, has the biggest long Canadian dollar position in about 4 years. The market's pricing in 3 rate hikes by the end of 2022. And this could sort of like hit a reality that maybe the Canadian economy a bit slower with the vaccine rollout, slower to sort of open up and reinvigorate. And we could see the second month in a row of job losses in Canada. And I would expect that would prompt the Bank of Canada to sound maybe somewhat less hawkish than they did in April, which had signaled or triggered almost a 4.5% rally in the Canadian dollar.
Honestly, I would be shocked if Canada somehow manages to add jobs during this month because, quite frankly, stuff was shutting down, right? So, I don't know. Somehow Canada has, though, surprised in terms of that data. Taking into account the Reserve Bank of Australia, their meeting, and also the data that could come out of Canada, sounds like you might see some weakness on the back of both of these news events, I guess. Anything that you're carrying over to commodity moves then? Because these are very commodity-focused currencies.
Yes, I think I'd be watching what China does. China had signaled that commodity prices had gotten too far, or too high. And so they've taken, it's really kind of interesting that rather than take like very strong overt measures, they're really doing micro issues, making like trying to crack down on regulations that they can close a blind eye to sometimes, as far as maybe illegal mining or unauthorized mining, is a better way to put it. I'd be watching what China does with commodities, but you can see what's happening elsewhere too. I mean, that the commodity complex has gotten, there's more disparity or more like a divergence within it. I'm thinking about gold going above $1,900 an ounce this past week. I see lumber prices, looks like they've rolled over, though it's hard to tell because it's still so volatile. So I'm watching these as a sign that maybe the commodity super cycle story has played itself out and went for a corrective phase led by the signals from China.
That's very interesting. How long could this correction be for the commodity space? Because in all fairness, it has been a very strong run, and there's a lot of people talking about this being a commodity super cycle.
Yeah, I don't know. I think so much, it always scares me. So much, it seems to me, at some point we have to just think about how much is priced in, how good can good be? And as much as it looks like it's true, trees don't really grow to the sky. And so I think the same kind of thing in the markets, that I just want to be watching more carefully those macro fundamentals. Growth is, U.S. numbers have disappointed. China, we're going to get the Chinese PMI for May in the next few days. And it doesn't look like their economy is really accelerating. And so, yes, there's going to be some catch-up with Europe, catch-up in Asia. But I worry that we've really like projected a lot more than seems reasonable in the near term.
Okay, Mark, final comments. And regarding that G7 meeting, the minimum corporate tax or how to tax the top 100 companies, will this have an impact if something is passed on the largest companies, the companies that, in all fairness, can drive markets to a greater degree than anything else?
Well, no, that's a good point. I keep an eye on Ireland, which is not a member of the G7. It's not part of the G20 caucus yet. It's 12.5% corporate tax rate, draws a lot of pharmaceutical companies and technology companies to use Ireland as sort of the center, the financial center, where profits can be booked and other tax maneuvering. And Ireland does not want any part of this global minimum tax that's above their current tax rate. I think that countries have to figure out how to compete. It's a very competitive world. And some countries like Ireland can compete on taxes. It doesn't make sense necessarily for all countries to do that. I think there's an effort to try to avoid a race to the bottom. My point of caution would be this, that there's a big difference between the tax schedule and the effective tax rate. So, for example, while the U.S. corporate tax rate was around, we had cut it to 21%, the effective U.S. tax rate on U.S. corporates, the effective, was closer to 16%. And so we just want to be careful of making sure that tax reform doesn't turn out to be a new boondoggle for lawyers and accountants to figure out new ways to work around them.
Let's see how that all plays out, though, right, Mark? Well, Mark, we're going to wrap up the weekend edition here. It's great having you on the show. I hope everybody enjoyed that first hour, really focused on precious metals, but then also here recapping what to pay attention to for next week. Everybody, keep the emails coming, fleck@kereport.com. I love hearing from all of you. I do my best to get back to all of you, and especially when it comes to company questions, I am out there trying to source all that information for you and get you more a comprehensive answer and outlook from a number of my favorite guests. So, hey, keep those emails coming. And everyone down in the U.S., I hope you have a great long weekend. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.